Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all these skills to address the subjects that we grapple with in this conversation with the Reluctant Therapist. Happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Tyler.
How are you?
I am not feeling anxious, so that's a good day.
Oh, wonderful. I'm anxious all the time.
Well, and I think that's a very common experience for a lot of people. 39% of the population experiences some level of anxiety at any moment. And then when you're around people who are anxious and you have a tendency towards anxiety, it can trigger your anxiety as well.
I'm looking forward to today's conversation as someone that has struggled on and off with anxiety. And I've also had different medical providers try to tell me it's been depression before when I know for a fact it's anxiety. So I'm interested to see what you have to say about it today.
Thank you. Yeah, we are going to dive into anxiety. And it seemed like a good time of year to bring this up right around the holidays, because I think having to go to social events or mingle with family or, you know, that kind of end of the year reevaluation of our lives can cause a lot of anxiety and stress. And although anxiety is the most common of our mental health complaints, it's really not well understood, and it gets lumped in with all the other mental health concerns and is quite often considered a disease or a disorder or an illness, when it, in most senses, is a situational or contextual issue. That anxiety itself is part of, unlike, well, even depression in some ways, we can talk about that, but unlike other mental health issues like bipolar disorder or psychotic breaks or schizophrenia, that we would put out on the far end of the spectrum of being more of a biological or medical mental health disease. Anxiety and depression tend to float on a very large spectrum of levels of intensity. And although there is a genetic component to anxiety and depression, we can see it run through generation after generation. There's patterns of depression and anxiety. Some people argue that being in a household of a depressed person or an anxious person can trigger anxiety and depression. Mm-hmm. And so the genetic component is actually very small because it doesn't really come into play unless someone is triggered, and then you can attach it to that genetic component. There's a temperament piece, and then there's a situational piece to anxiety. And the reason anxiety is such a challenging mood disorder to deal with is because the essence of anxiety is essential to the human experience. Because anxiety, in many ways, triggers our fight or flight response. And that fight or flight response is essential to our survival. You know, if we're about to be hit by a car, or we fall in love, or we find something that we're excited about, or something we're terrified of, all of those things, falling in love and being terrified, trigger that fight or flight response. And so our mouth gets dry, our hands get sweaty, our heart rate speeds up.
You start sweating uncontrollably.
Right. Yeah. It gives you the capacity to either run really fast, or, you know, take on an opponent, or make love to someone. Like all of those intense human experiences. So in essence, we don't want to drive anxiety out of our bodies or out of our experience, because it's an essential piece. And there's been some interesting research about different monkeys. I think it's rhesus monkeys. And they had looked at a tribe of rhesus monkeys and identified a few of the monkeys that would be considered anxious, hypervigilant, constantly restless and moving. And they removed those monkeys out of the system to study them. And when they took the monkeys back, the rest of the system had died in the wild. And they realized, because those hypervigilant rhesus monkeys were the ones that were keeping everyone else safe, that they were hyper aware, they were hypervigilant, they were paying attention. And so anxiety, those who are anxious, actually serve a very important role in society. Having said that, it's an incredibly uncomfortable experience for anyone who really struggles with or suffers with constant chronic anxiety, whether it's in the generalized form or if it's a specific phobia like social anxiety or cars, you know, driving over bridges or OCD. Specific phobias are also linked to anxiety.
Not to mention that just as society progresses and the more inundated with technology are, the more things to make us anxious on the daily basis.
Right. And anxiety, triggering that fight or flight response is at the heart of how consumers are controlled. And that's a whole nother show. But that's how businesses drive sales, is by creating a sense of anxiety in the consumer so that consumers will purchase whatever is available to help tampen down the anxiety. So a few other things about anxiety, besides it being a natural and normal response to stress to help keep us safe, when it becomes chronic, we have two main ways that we tend to deal with anxiety. One is psychotherapy and the other is medications. And medications as a whole can bring relief, but generally not long term. At some point, they stop being effective and you either have to up your dose or you have to change medications often. And it doesn't end anxiety in your system. It actually just tampens down the symptoms. And the difficult thing about medications in dealing with anxiety and depression is that as you come off, or if you come off of those medications, the symptoms of anxiety get exacerbated and make it even more challenging to come off the meds. But some people have found that the medications have given them enough relief to live their lives. So that's a win for those less than 50% who are diagnosed with anxiety disorder. If they get that relief, that's a win. But then the other 50% of the people who don't get any relief from medications quite often will go to cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a psychotherapy that helps to address our thoughts or our cognitions about an issue to help change our behaviors, which is an anxious response or a panic attack response. And so cognitive behavioral therapy has been quite successful. But again, it has its limitations because the psyche is a brilliant part of our being. And that when we learn to manage one area of anxiety, quite often we'll develop another, because that tendency towards anxiety is quite powerful in our system. And so it's very hard to ever say, I've combated anxiety completely and I never experience it, because our psyche, especially if we're very high functioning or have a highly have a temperament that leans toward an anxious state, it's always going to find its way back. So currently we have things like mindfulness training and working on breathing and meditation and diet and exercise and yoga, and different nutrition and different natural herbs that help. There's a lot of areas that are spreading out to help bring some relief or to manage the symptoms of anxiety. But one of the areas we don't talk about very often are actual programs like surf therapy or backpacking therapy or flow therapy, which is engaging yourself fully in an activity like mountain biking or swimming or doing crossword puzzles, something that focuses your mind so intently that it helps to settle the nervous system so that your normal rested autonomic state can reemerge and you can start functioning again. That if we can, what they call the monkey mind, if we can calm down the monkey mind, we can start breathing normally and function again. So in thinking about anxiety, I like to go to one of my favorite people, Breanne Burkhardt. She's patiently been waiting here. Hi, Breanne.
Hi.
So I've known Breanne since she was 9 months old. She wouldn't remember, but I have, because I've been friends with her mom since before either one of us were married. And so I've had the pleasure of watching Breanne grow up and get married. And she's been friends with my daughter, Kirsten, for their entire childhood and adult life. One of the pictures I want to post on Instagram is of the two of you when you're young. So I'll try to remember to do that. But in her 20s, Breanne confided in me that she had been struggling with anxiety in different forms and had taken a lot of different paths and really struggled to find some balance or healing. And so we often talk about our paths, our individual paths, and our experience with other people around anxiety. And a couple years ago, Breanne started talking about horses and how getting back to being with horses was having a profound effect. And then I guess maybe last year, we started talking about this program you'd started called Equine Guided Empowerment and how it had changed your life and brought you to a place where you could make friends with anxiety. And so Brianne is here today to talk about her journey with equine guided empowerment and how horses have changed her experience of her moods and her anxiety and, given her a whole new outlook in life.
Definitely. Thank you for that introduction and for having me. I love being here and talking to you about life in general. So especially when it's something that I'm passionate about, I'm grateful to have a platform to share it.
Absolutely. So we are going to open the phone lines in a bit, but I want to start off by giving Brianne a chance to kind of tell her story of how she got to this place with horses and dealing with anxiety. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. You can follow us on my Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. There's pictures of Brianne and her horses up today. We post different information about the shows. You can leave me a message. We also have our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and you can listen to previous shows at kcbx.org or podcast our show to share with friends. Just go to Apple Podcasts, search A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, hit subscribe, and you can follow us. So as always, I'm excited to see where we go. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back to start our story. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
Holding hands with my depression, and right when I think I've overcome it, anxiety starts kicking in to teach a little lesson. Oh, I try my best just to be social. I make all these plans with friends and hope they call and cancel. Then I overthink about the things I'm missing. Now I'm wishing I was with them. Feel like I'm always apologizing for feeling like I'm out of my mind when I'm doing just fine. My exes will say that I'm hard to deal with, and I admit it. Yeah, but all my friends, they don't know what it's like, what it's like. They don't understand why I can't sleep through the night. I've been told that I could take something to fix it. Damn, I wish it was that simple. All my friends, they don't know what it's like, what it's like. Always wanted to
be one of those people. That was Julia Michaels singing about anxiety. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and my guest today is Brianne Barkhart. Brianne, I'm always happy when you're here.
Me too.
It's just like sitting at our house, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But we have these big round microphones in our way. Let's start off. We're going to talk about the horses and equine guided empowerment, but talk a little bit about anxiety in your life and how it's impacted you.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, my first conscious awareness that what I was dealing with was anxiety growing up happened after my dad passed away. I was faced with very real physical symptoms that came and forced me to pay attention to how I was feeling and how I was maybe not coping with how I was feeling. But when I had my anxiety attacks, my panic attacks that would come up, I started reflecting on my childhood and realizing that I had what they diagnosed as like asthma, but it was really just anxiety attacks at like a very young age. Mm-hmm. And I think I'm a thinker. I deeply think and feel. And I had a really hard time in my perspective controlling how I was thinking and feeling. And so that took over for a while. And I tried a lot of different modalities to try and have access to some peace mm-hmm. in my life instead of letting my thoughts and overwhelming feelings control how I would move through life, and I was missing out on so much.
Right, like what kind of things did you find yourself avoiding because you didn't want to have the panic?
Well, I would try and avoid thinking, but ultimately it would like wake me up in the middle of the night, and I was challenged in having deep present relationships with my husband, with people around me, because I was always just simmering under the surface of like trying to keep myself pulled together. So I think ultimately the biggest things that I missed out on were quality relationships mm-hmm. and fulfilling positive interactions. So that was pretty much my and going after what I wanted in life. I think I was paralyzed a little bit. Fear, anxiety paralyzes you. That's that fight or flight, you know? There is also a paralyzed
right,
option.
Right, I didn't mention that, yes. That we think we're going to be able to fight or flight, but quite often anxiety is the paralysis mm-hmm. of not being able to go either way. Mm-hmm. And also if it's not attached to something specific. Because if the fight or flight is you almost got hit by a car or you need to run from a bear, it has context. And so you can move or stand your ground. But the problem with anxiety is that it's quite often not attached to anything. It's
yes.
not generalized, hence generalized anxiety disorder, like waking up in the middle of the night and your heart is pounding,
yes.
or for no apparent reason, you're having a great time out with your friends and you get this wave of panic and it's not attached to anything. And so you do get paralyzed.
Yes. And being paralyzed for me is very frustrating. You know, if you think about you're stuck from progressing. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't seeing progress in my relationships, in my career, in my personal life. And so it was time to be motivated to figure out how to fix it. And so the blessing of anxiety for me was that it forced me to pay attention and to do something different. And that brought in a lot of great options for me, massage, yoga, acupuncture. My faith has always been a really strong foundation for me, and that helps keep things in context. But I needed to be doing something physically with my body to make a difference, and those things helped.
I know I felt that moving the energy was always really important for me, the restlessness of the anxiety, not being able to sit still. So I had to be in motion, and things like
yes.
yoga or acupuncture and massage were challenging for me. They didn't bring a calming that I expected, even though everyone said meditate. It exacerbated
yes.
that.
Yes, and if I allowed myself to get past the discomfort of being still, but being still in a mindful, supported way, I was able to move through the discomfort. But that was the difference for me, is like laying in bed at night feeling paralyzed, I had no outlet, but laying in Shavasana at the end of a yoga practice where you were moving the energy and you were moving and having somatic experiences and thinking mm-hmm. Married with that, I was then able to feel safe and supported in my Shavasana and meditate in a more peaceful way.
So you got to that.
I got to that, but you have to move through the discomfort, which is uncomfortable.
And let's talk about the trigger. Although you said you can remember the feelings of anxiousness at a young age, as I can as well, but when your dad died, that really was
catalyst.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So what was it that shifted? What started happening to you at that time? Because you were married to Chris at that time.
So 3 months before my husband and I got married, my dad suddenly passed away. And that was traumatic for everybody. And I think generationally, there's a lot of anxiety in my family and
fear. You have that temperament.
Fear-based, yeah. And survival mode is actually more comfortable for us. And so when we went into survival mode, we got things done. We did all the things that we needed to do to mourn him, quote unquote. And then when things calmed down is when all the feelings came through and manifested in my panic attacks and my anxiety. And then that also manifested in me having fear that I would lose my husband or that something would happen to me. And just like you said, you know, your anxiety transforms into different things. I healed to a certain extent the fear that something would happen to my husband, and then transferred that when I had my kids to like, what if something happens to me? Mm-hmm. So it's an interesting process because it keeps revealing itself whenever I have some work to do. And so I'm grateful for that now.
Well, and I think you brought up the key point is that we expect to feel anxious or uncomfortable if we have to give a speech or when someone passes away and there's that trauma and we're dealing with that. When we can attach the feelings to something, it's much different than when you think you've now gotten past the event, the trigger, and then the feelings come. You know, so not long time, but after your dad had died and you'd thought maybe you're over some of the grief and we're moving forward, that's when your whole system said no.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's still here.
It's still here. And anxiety is the way that our psyche tells us there's work that's undone.
Mm-hmm.
So you got trained to be a yoga
teacher.
Yep. And then that was helpful.
Yes.
You had the boys.
And I became a massage therapist. And
yes.
That was helpful. I was surrounded by such healing, positive energy and spaces that were like really beautiful. Mm-hmm. And that I was able to have context and understanding over trauma in my life or things I needed to work through, and I had great modalities to use. And then I had my kids. Mm-hmm. And then I realized I was giving so much to my kids that I didn't have anything else left to give as far as teaching yoga or doing massage went.
Yes, everything you were doing was about giving out
yes.
energy and giving out care.
Mm-hmm. And so I needed to re-support myself. And so when the kids went back to school, I part-time homeschool. So I don't have a ton of time, but I make use of the time I have. And when they went back to school, or they went to school, I ventured back into horses. And they had always been something I loved. And I grew up riding, and my mom had a horse growing up, and then we fell out of it. But it always was a passion of mine. Every time we'd travel, I'd make my husband take me trail horseback riding. And, you know, I just really felt peace when I was with them.
And not really understanding why.
No.
But just feeling drawn.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Just kind of like a magnet. Just kept bringing me back. And I got back into riding and eventually found who's one of my best friends now, Mindy Smith. And she has this breed of horses called Rocky Mountain Gated Horses. And they are the most incredible spirits I've ever been around. Also, I have back issues. So the gait of the horse, it's a 5-beat gait, and it's very smooth and relaxing for your back, which is really accessible for me. And then I was able to go out in the trails and be in nature, which was the other part of the equation that I needed in order to come back to myself, was to be outside. Mm-hmm. And I could access views and vantage points and the kind of peace that I had never been able to access before through these horses. And then through that, and it's funny how, you know, whatever you believe in, whether it's God or like a divine energy or whatever, it's funny how life just brings you to what you need when you're ready for it. And I found equine guided empowerment through Mindy Smith and some people that started teaching me this modality. And it's interesting when I try and explain it to people, mm-hmm. they're like, what is it? And I'm like, well, it's kind of like equine therapy. And they're like, oh, therapy for the horses. And I'm like, no, it's for the people, but it's not therapy because we're not quote unquote therapists. And I've done a couple different trainings. I'm currently in a mastery program called the Reflective Horse. And it's incredible work because I've spent a lot of time in therapy, and there is a time and a place for it. But for me, I needed something somatically to be able to connect to my body and tap into maybe those trapped parts of myself that had some trauma left there, mm-hmm. and move through it. It's mm-hmm. not about being stuck. It's about moving through it gracefully and having those resources. And the horses are the perfect avenue for that. A lot of people ask why horses, and horses are incredible biofeedback animals. Mm-hmm. There's been a lot of studies, the HeartMath Institute, have you heard of that? They study the heart and of humans and different species and the electromagnetic field that radiates from your heart. And horses have a reach of 20 feet around them. So you could be near a horse 20 feet from them. And don't quote me on this, but within a short amount of time, maybe 20 or 30 minutes, you're going to be regulated with the horse at the same rhythm, not at the same exact beats, obviously, but
you sync up,
yeah. The energy syncs up. And they're healing just by being with them. So you don't have to do much. But I've said this before, but I could spend 10 years in therapy, and the amount of truth that I see in an hour in an arena with a horse that's 800 or 1,000 pounds is really incredible. And they have surprisingly low patience for lying to yourself.
So the horse knows. They read the energy.
Yes, they read it, and they'll tell you. Mm-hmm. And you'll see it reflected. And by moving through it with them, they'll respect you and be there with you when you're with yourself.
So then what's changed for you in your body and with anxiety over the last couple of years? How are you different?
So I think it's important with what you said in the beginning, which is that anxiety doesn't go away. It manifests differently. But what I've noticed that's different for me is that I'm not so stuck up in the story. Mm-hmm. There's a story that we tell about ourselves and our anxiety. I told my story, right, about how I got here. But the script that I was repeating to myself of what I needed to do and the math problem of how I needed to fix it went away. And I had more faith in myself. Mm-hmm. And that's the beautiful gift of working with horses, is that anytime I do a session with someone or we do this equine guided empowerment, it's not about me telling you how to fix the problem. It's you figuring out for yourself, oftentimes without even words, what you need and how to heal yourself. Mm-hmm. And the answers are all within you. You're just going to find it more easily with a horse next to you.
If you're just tuning in, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. My guest is Breanne Burkhart. Breanne is a wife and a mom of two young boys, and she is finishing up the mastery of equine guided empowerment. And she's also a massage therapist and a yoga teacher and a loving daughter. I'm good friends with her mom. And so you bring all of these gifts to where you are today. And we're talking about kind of alternative ways to work with and make friends with anxiety, because I think that's really what I'm hoping we get to today, is this idea that anxiety serves a purpose. It's always trying to tell us something. You know, even though it seems to just appear out of nowhere in your most relaxed states, or sometimes I'm just sitting on the couch enjoying it, even my husband, and just this wave comes over. And it's a reminder that I'm alive, which is something I never appreciated until I had a professor when I was doing my master's who said, all of us are neurotic. And if I could choose my neurosis, I would choose anxiety, because people who are anxious are the most alive. Unfortunately, they can't filter anything, and so that's what makes anxiety uncomfortable. But because they can't filter anything, they feel love and joy and ecstasy fully, as do they feel pain and fear and despair. So trying to make friends with those feelings and kind of move with the energy of anxiety is really important. And I think that's what I'm hearing you say in working with horses. I've heard people say that with surfing, because I'm involved along with that, that you have to be paying attention to the water and to the ocean and to the waves. And so it calms your mind down, because you're so busy focusing on this, you can't get caught up in the story. And so now it's just you and the water. So is that
what? Yes. There's a rhythm to the ocean, just like there's a rhythm to horses. And it's interesting, because becoming friends with anxiety, or just accepting that energy that's coming through, another reason why horses are so effective is they're fight or flight animals, just like us. They have proprioceptors like we have, which is they can recognize pain in other horses. They can recognize all of those things. Their brain is very similar to a traumatized person's brain. So they can reflect and relate to what we're going through. And it's really interesting when you really get into the world of horses and you start understanding things at a slightly different level. A lot of people look for dead broke horses to purchase, and I will explain it. So a dead broke horse is a horse that doesn't respond. It's bomb proof, meaning anything could come out of the wild if you're riding the horse and it wouldn't react.
Okay. And so it's almost been desensitized.
100%. And it's interesting, because us as humans, we feel safer hearing that. And then when I've gone through this training and I've understood horses better, I've understood that fight or flight is a purpose, and helping a horse move through what they're afraid of is a way to heal what we're afraid of as well. And that feelings are okay. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to me that we try and force horses to not feel, just like we don't want to. And so there's a lot to relate to with horses when it comes time to interact with them and ride with them. And they can be our partners when it comes to helping us be real and accepting what's going on in our own lives. If we accept what's going on in our own lives, they're going to show up for us every time.
I'm fascinated with this idea. Is it, what's it called? Barn broke?
Dead broke.
Okay.
An interesting term. Dead broke.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, I think, in society today would want to move through life themselves that way.
I think we are trying to with all the technology and numbing and screens. So,
yes.
Yeah, that is the goal, it seems.
And it's uncomfortable.
Drugs and alcohol.
It's uncomfortable, and it's unpredictable to allow a horse or a human to be in their feelings and to work through it. And there's this lack of faith that if we are in our feelings, or if we're in what we're afraid of, that we'll never get through it. Mm-hmm. But the problem is you're stunting your growth there. And so you're either going to be stuck right before it and never know what's on the other side, or you're going to be stuck in it. So,
and that is what's interesting about trying to numb or move away from pain and fear, is that you can only ignore it for so long, but then you're just in this place of constant discomfort.
Avoidance.
And I always like to remind my students that the harder we try to get rid of pain or avoid discomfort, or, you know, be numbed to the experience of life, the more we lose the opportunity to feel joy and pleasure and ecstasy, which I imagine writing also brings to you because you have that childhood memories of the joy. So all of the therapeutic benefits are also buoyed by just the pure pleasure you have.
100%. And it's a really beautiful gift that I'm able to experience life with horses. And I could get really emotional if I talk about it.
I can see your eyes welling up.
Because they're like, it's like a spiritual experience, honestly. And doesn't mean that I don't get afraid. It doesn't mean that I don't. But it's the first thing in my life that has scared me enough, but I love enough to work through.
To keep going back.
And that's what is the gift for me. And that's how it helps me with my anxiety mostly.
Because it keeps you in the saddle.
It keeps me in the saddle and it keeps me, hopefully, and it keeps me being real and not avoiding. And I have to show up. And a lot of people say when you go in to work with a horse, oh, leave your feelings at the barn, leave whatever happened to you before this at the barn door, and then go work with your horse because you don't want them to see that you're struggling. And we, in the Reflective Horse Program and through Cassandra Ogier, which is my mentor, she's like, no, take all that with you to the barn door. Take all that with you to the horse, and you're going to find a lot of beauty there. By being real.
Can a dead, broke horse be brought back
sometimes
to sensation?
Sometimes yes, sometimes no. I think
because I'm just trying to equate that to
yes,
a human.
Yes. I think it's possible for any horse. It's a matter of if they're willing to. And then you get into this whole beautiful world of consent.
Okay.
And that also mirrors a lot of traumatic experiences for people. Traumatized people, whether that be sexually, physically, mentally, emotionally traumatized people, a lot comes up when you're dealing with a horse and you're dealing with consent and whether that horse is consenting to work with you or in the mood to do the work. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing when you start asking how willing these horses are to show up. But then if you're going to really delve into this and you're really going to try and start listening clearly, then you have to be able to let go of your ego enough to respect whatever it is they're telling you. So when they say no,
so are there days you show up and the horse is nope?
Yes. And you learn a lot those days. Mm-hmm. I do specifically. And I've had some of the best experiences with my specific horse when he has told me no week after week and then offers his back to me and wants me to ride him. Like the most incredible experience ever.
My guest is Breanne Burkhart, and we're talking about anxiety and an alternative practice, an alternative therapy to working with anxiety called equine guided empowerment. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and we're going to open up the phone lines shortly. Our number is 805-781-3875. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX. We'll be back to take your calls.
Back about 18 and 25, I left Tennessee very much alive. I never would have made it through the Arkansas mud if I hadn't been riding on a Tennessee stud. Had some trouble with my sweetheart's paw. One of her brothers was a bad outlaw. I wrote a letter to my Uncle Fudd, and I rode away on a Tennessee stud. The Tennessee stud was long and lean, the color of the sun, and his eyes were green. He had the nerve and he had the blood, there never was a horse like the Tennessee stud. Drifted on down into no man's land, across the river called the Rio Grande. Raced my horse with the Spaniard's foal till I got me a skin full of silver and gold.
Little Johnny Cash, Tennessee Stud. I was thinking of you, Breanne. We went through music today. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And our number is 805-781-3875 if you have a question or comment for Breanne or myself. And we're talking about equine guided empowerment. And you mentioned earlier that when people know that you are involved with horses, they go, oh, you're doing equine therapy. Mm-hmm. So talk a little bit about the different ways that people are working with horses in therapeutic ways.
So there is endless, like if you were to Google it, there's endless options for what you can seek out when it comes to working and partnering with horses. There is equine therapy, which is working with a mental health professional and having therapy with the horse.
There's a therapist, a horse, and the client?
Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Typically, it's never the mental health professional that's also doing the horse partnering.
So you might also have another.
Yes. Okay. So typically, there's two people when you're doing that kind of therapy, which is really great for people that are dealing with severe mental health issues or a lot of trauma. It's hard for me because it's like opening Pandora's box when you start to do this work. And you want to make sure that people are properly supported if things come out of that box, that you can't just put the lid back on. Mm-hmm. And
you don't necessarily want to.
No, and you don't want to, but you want them to be supported enough. And I know that I didn't do a master's degree in mental health care. So I provide people with a list of resources for people that they can go to if they feel like they need to continue that conversation with people. Mm-hmm. There's also rhythmic writing that's often offered to people with physical disabilities. And that's really great because the rhythm of being on the back of a horse, but having someone carefully guide that horse is meditative and self-regulating for people. They're able to tap into the regulation that happens every time that hoof hits.
So that's to like calm breathing?
Or? Yes, and on the back of the horse. So say if someone's in a wheelchair, they're able to be put on this horse and they're able to feel the movement. And it's really, really therapeutic. It's beautiful. There's also EMDR training with horseback riding now that they're doing with therapists, and which is the rapid eye movement desensitization, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know. You know it. Mm-hmm. But what
eye movement rapid desensitization, if people are wondering what EMDR is.
There you go. Mm-hmm. It's the world is endless, and there's a big boom happening, and a lot of interest is going into working with veterans with horse therapy, and a lot of Mindy Smith Rockies, we do volunteer work with a couple of organizations locally that are rehab programs where groups come out and we offer this horsemanship and then equine guided empowerment as an offering that we just offer.
But is it two parts then? There's the equine guided empowerment and then teaching people how to care for the horses?
Yes.
That's what you talk about, horsemanship? Yes. Or actual riding?
It depends. When I come to Mindy's location, we do both. When I take a client just myself, I'm doing just equine guided empowerment partnered with how to care for the horse. Because like we said, that whole consent thing is we want the horse to get to know us and we want to appreciate and give back to the horse in the way that they're giving to us. And you learn a lot about boundaries when you're doing this kind of work with the horses. So
it's okay to have them.
Yes. And being sensitive to the language that happens, because a lot of people, the fearful thing about dealing with a big animal is they don't understand what they're saying because they're not speaking English right to us, but they are speaking all the time. So just teaching them that kind of stuff. So this type of treatment, quote unquote, or offering would be, or partnership would be great for someone that's just looking to deepen their self-awareness, work through connecting in a powerful way with an animal. And it's really for everybody. It doesn't matter the age. Typically you want someone that's at least in their teens because they're ready to listen in that way. But children are incredible with horses, but the equine guided empowerment is most effective with teens and up.
And I think it's a beautiful thing to watch young children with animals because they have such a natural affinity for the animals. I think that we're born with this intertwined experience of nature, and that we have that removed as we get institutionalized with school and work and, you know, being cut off from nature. But children come preloaded to be completely immersed in a relationship with animals, which is why pets are so powerful.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And you have a whole menagerie of pets at your, yeah, right?
We're basically starting Noah's Ark at our house.
Yes.
We've got two of everything. We've got two alpacas, two cats. We've got two horses.
How has that impacted your boys? How have you seen
incredibly
that influence them?
Incredibly. You learn the circle of life when you're around animals. They don't have the lifespan that we do. We actually just, my oldest son buried his gecko yesterday. Mm. But it was beautiful because this is the reality of life. And I think in this country and in this world, and especially in my own life, death has been a fearful thing. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful. It's just like birth. It's something that comes hand in hand with life. And so that's been a great tool for my kids to be able to frame feelings and caring for something else. And listening to the, you know, subconscious and listening to the nonverbal cues that animals give you helps you understand your own boundaries and your own desires a lot better.
When you talked earlier about those answers coming to us when we're with the horses or when we're surfing or when we're walking, or and that all of the answers to life really do reside inside of us, but the world is so noisy and our life is so noisy. And you talked about having to, you know, get comfortable with your thoughts, because our thoughts are kind of geared towards keeping us so preoccupied that we never really tap in to our deeper feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Either we're pre-wired for that, to just be constantly distracted, or we consciously distract ourselves to avoid the feelings. But what a beautiful way to focus that energy to allow our internal truths to come forward. And I go back to children. They if we listen to children, they really know what they want or need or what is their truth and what their comfort is. And it's sad but wonderful that as adults, we have to actually go backwards
mm-hmm.
to tap into the trusting our own voice. I mean, isn't it amazing that we spend all of childhood trying to teach children not to trust their voice and to listen to authority, and then we spend our adulthood trying to recapture and trust that voice that we had all along?
The key word is empowerment. Mm-hmm. I've seen even as young as like 12 and 13 year olds have trouble feeling empowered and finding their voice. And, you know, when you look and observe a herd of horses, nothing is personal. Mm-hmm. Everything is energy moving, and it's energy recognizing. And if that horse doesn't feel the seriousness or the authenticity that's coming from a horse that's wanting to move it out of the way, it's not going to move. Mm-hmm. And same as any human coming into a herd. If you want to move into a horse's space and they're not, and you're not really in your power, they're not going to move. Mm-hmm. And it's not personal.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is a great somatic experiencing to be able to connect to, whoa, I am pretending here. I'm not really feeling what it feels like to command my space,
mm-hmm.
to be in my body.
Mm-hmm.
Quick example is that I'm a taller girl, and all my life I've kind of, you know, shrugged my shoulders and like made myself feel smaller
mm-hmm.
for being a woman and being taller than a lot of men. And I found very quickly walking into a herd of horses that if I'm shrinking down, they're not going to honor me, and they love me great, like they're nothing against me. I'm not being authentic in my energy and commanding my space.
The calling out part, which you keep going back to,
mm-hmm.
to be called out when we're pretending to be
reflected.
Yeah.
They reflect it to you. Yeah. When you're pretending or when you're faking it or when you're not being truly in tune with how you're feeling. If I come in and I'm going to work with my horse and I'm having a really sad day,
mm-hmm.
the amount of shift that I see happen with my horse when I say, well, I say out loud verbally, I'm sad today. And he immediately chooses to join me compared to like he'll start at the other end of the pasture. And when I start talking or thinking or feeling, he's recognizing that and wants to join with me. And to be positively reinforced that being connected to how I feel is going to bring love and respect is like so beautiful.
It is. My guest is Breanne Burkhart. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Our number is 805-781-3875. Two questions. The first is, how has this changed your life with your husband? Because he's an active guy. You know, he has a million things going at any one moment, training for an event or traveling to take pictures. I mean, his life is full.
Yes.
And you've carved out this place for yourself. How has it changed your relationship?
It's like so much. Honestly, it's the best thing I've done for our marriage. And he is incredibly supportive and has.
Is he a horse guy?
He was never a horse person. Listen, he grew up with no animals. He was actually fearful of horses. He still is to a certain extent, but he fell in love with this horse that he has, Patriot. And it's been such a gift to me that he's been willing to even sliver out a little bit of time and to be excited and into what I'm into, because he has a million things, like
he
you
does.
Said. But it's interesting because, you know, you say, you know, moving meditation, like surfing or cycling or whatever that
walking,
is.
Walking, hiking.
That's all he does because his mind is going all the time. So his body's constantly moving. adding this modality in of just being with horses has changed his perspective of self-awareness and the stuff that's still there that he's hiding from, that we all hide from.
Yes.
And then also, I've just really realized my own crap. You know, I've really realized where I'm limiting myself from connecting more deeply with him through this work with the horses. And I can come with a question when I come to work with the horses that's specifically about our relationship, and pretty quickly figure out what the root is when I'm dealing with them. And then also just to share riding with him. It's a beautiful thing to be able to learn something new together. And to, for him, he's the expert at everything he does. And for me to know something a little bit more than him is so great.
It brings balance, because all couples and relationships need balance. And all couples and relationships need new things that they're excited about, because we adapt to our habits and our routines, and that really can make a relationship stale. We get that hedonistic adaptation, so we have to keep bringing in something that shakes it up. And you two have been together since you were in high school, so that's a lot of retraining of your relationship. And I'm also curious, because he knew you through some really traumatic, devastating times and saw you probably pull back a lot. And so I would imagine that seeing you come to life again has really changed the way he interacts with you.
Yeah, again, you're going to make me emotional today.
That's my goal.
What is that?
If you don't cry, then it hasn't been a good show.
No, it's a gift, because, you know, marriage is hard, and knowing each other and being together since you're in high school, you do, I mean, if you're not growing, then you're stuck or you're regressing. And one of the best things about being married to him is he pushes me to grow and I push him to grow. And so for him to recognize that I'm becoming a better version of myself through this avenue, he's done everything he can to support it. You know, he's really encouraged it, because he sees the joy that it brings me, and sees that I'm becoming a better wife and a better mom by doing that, by making that time.
And I think a lot of times in relationships, we fear bringing new things in because we don't want to lose what we have, you know, because anything that we do differently changes our homeostasis, our comfort changes. And there is that time where Chris doesn't like horses. What if he never comes around? What will that do to our relationship? And so quite often we retreat and we stay in the fear of not changing, because we don't want anything to be different. But then we get bored and we get in a rut. So there's some courage that goes into even bringing something new into a relationship and saying, here's where I am. Are you going to come with me?
Are you going to meet me?
Right. Are we going to do this together? And that level of faith and trust in each other is really important for building for your future.
Well, and the biggest gift with that, to piggyback on that, is that I often get excited about things and I want him to see it exactly how I see it when I see it.
Yes.
Because I'm a little impatient. Yes. And maybe a lot. And what I've learned through this work is that I have to trust that the answers are in him. And it's not my job to show him point A to point Z exactly how he needs to find his answers. Same thing with my kids. And to have faith and have trust that when the time is right, the right answers will come to him, just like they did for me.
And the horses force you to slow down, which 100%. I think probably has been wonderful for you, to be forced to develop patience, because if you push the horse, he probably pushes back further.
Yes. Yes. They have independent spirits and will. And that's what I love about our horses. They're young horses. Chris was the first one to ride his horse ever. And that's rare to be able to have that kind of length of experience from basically the childhood of your horse to grow up together. And you learn a lot about pressure and release and playfulness, actually. For me, it's interesting. You know, Chris is really the playful parent, and I always thought I was playful. I always thought I could play with kids, no problem. But when I get out there and I'm trying to encourage a horse to be joyful and be in his feelings and his body, I notice where I'm stuck.
Interesting. And then the second question was, if someone is listening and said, I don't know much about horses, but I loved them when I was young, and I do feel like I want to experience this, how do they reach out and start? How do you get started with this?
So anywhere you're located at, you can Google Equine Guided Empowerment, Equine Guided Partnership. You can reach out to me. It's very simple, and there's not a lot to do. And a lot of people come to me that are fearful of interacting with horses, and we start very slow. And a lot of sometimes you're with a client for a month before they even pick a horse to work with. Mm. And there's a lot that comes up with that. So patience is key.
And so, and what is the process of Equine Guided Empowerment? What is the progression or the goal? You know, is there a 12-week session, or how does that work?
It depends on who you talk to and who's facilitating. For me, the goal, it's like yoga. You're never an expert.
Okay.
You never get a
So this is like a practice.
This is a practice, and you pick it up when you want, and mm-hmm. you let it go when you don't need it, or you choose to participate. There's also my mentor, Cass, participates in somatic riding, which is bareback bitless riding, where you're really connecting to the horse, and she has more of a prescription, but she's very free on it. It's like you're going to go with the flow of these individual people and these individual horses, and be okay with the flexibility that happens there.
Is it an expensive?
No, it's actually not super expensive. It's affordable when it comes down to it. You just have to deal with different practitioners charging different amounts.
All right. Well, we have a call. Trish, are you there?
Hi.
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 What's on your mind today?
Well, getting back to anxiety, I was just wondering if there's a relationship between a person's ACE score from the ACE study, Adverse Childhood Experiences, and anxiety. Like, would a high ACE score, has there been any research on that, how it relates?
That's a little bit out of my scope, because I don't know a lot about the ACE scores. So I don't have a great answer for you on that.
Okay.
It sounds like you're asking if you have childhood trauma, do you have a higher likelihood of anxiety later on in life, correct?
Right, yeah.
Well, I mean, from what you've experienced and from what I've seen with clients that have come to me, I would say 100%
yes.
You have a higher likelihood of anxiety. But the beauty that comes with that is the people that have that anxiety are so willing and wanting to evolve mm-hmm. through that there's a maturity and a wisdom in those people specifically that is unparalleled.
Well, and it's also interesting about childhood trauma that a lot of the research is pointing to the fact that very few people come out of childhood without some sort of trauma. And uh-huh. that a lot of the therapies that are coming up now, a lot of the research is focused on trauma-informed work being done, whether it's through equine therapy or through cognitive behavioral therapy. You know, we talked a lot about attachment therapy in the last decade, and right now everything's focused on that trauma-informed work because there is some level of trauma in most people's lives, and especially for children who've been through domestic violence or have had loss or grow up in a war-torn state, that how it comes out is not necessarily directly related to like a panic attack, but to this overall temperament or the way that they approach all relationships in their lives with more tentativeness or fear.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Okay, great.
Answer your question?
Well, thank you.
I'm glad you called in. Thanks, Trish. The field of anxiety, and I'm glad Trish called because there is work being done constantly on every level to try to deal with or come up with answers or have programs or modalities because anxiety is so prevalent in so many people's lives. I mean, some research says that 1 in 2 people have some level of anxiety, and that's besides just a normal situational anxiety of being nervous about giving a speech or, you mm-hmm. know, starting a new job, but just that generalized anxiety, and that it is growing because of the uncertainty of the climate and the uncertainty of the political situation, the economy. And so it seemed to me, yeah, a lot is out of our control. And it would seem to me that something like equine guided empowerment, developing a relationship with a horse or an animal, would be essential in just kind of finding peace in every aspect of our life.
You've got it. And it's interesting because specifically on what Trish said about anxiety or trauma in childhood, maybe referring to having, you know, issues later on in life, some of the most powerful horse whisperers mm-hmm. out there mm-hmm. are people with extremely traumatized childhoods. Mm-hmm. And there's something about the trauma that horses just go through, especially domesticated horses that are weaned off of their moms very young and pulled away from their herd, and the different training techniques that they take. It's really interesting to see how they naturally are drawn to the work.
Diane, thanks for calling in.
Yeah.
Hi, you're on the line with Breanne. What's on your mind?
Hi, Breanne. Nice to meet you.
Hi.
I've heard a lot of good things about you.
Oh, thanks.
I'm a senior citizen, but I rode all my life, grew up going to the racetrack. My horses, my kids showed 4-H. I trained. We moved over here, and 2 weeks later, my horse passed away.
Oh.
And so for the last 3 years, I haven't been able to ride. And I'm just curious if you guys offer any kind of classes for that kind of a student that also has some medical problems.
Yeah, nice to meet you, Diane. Basically, there's great resources out there, specifically through the horse trainer that I got my horses from. She offers great training and horseback riding with horses that are specifically geared. The breed is specifically lends itself to senior citizens and people with any medical issues because they are gentler, calmer ride. And just being with the horses, doing anything like equine guided empowerment is accessible to anybody.
So how would Diane get in touch with you, and how would anyone else who's interested in starting get in touch with you or this program?
So I haven't really put out there like my website.
I'm putting you on the spot.
My website or anything yet. It's going to be called The Wild Witness is going to be my program. But basically you can find me on Instagram, Breanne Burkhardt, or Facebook, and then Mindy Smith Rockies on Facebook or Instagram.
Mindy Smith
Rockies.
R-O-C-K-I-E-S?
Correct.
All right, Diane, thank you for calling in.
All right, thank you. Bye.
Well, our hour goes too fast.
I know.
I want to wrap it up just by saying I love that you found this place to put all of your energy in your heart, because I think for people who struggle with anxiety, the anxiety cripples us in a way that we start to hide or tamp down or enclose all of this beautiful energy we have to offer. And I think part of the work for people who struggle with anxiety is to find a safe space to open that door and let everything burst out. And I'm so happy you found that metaphor. You've opened the
Pandora's box.
Yes. Yeah. Well, and positive, you've opened the barn door.
Yeah.
And you've allowed all of this energy to come out. And I can see the love in your eyes when you talk about your work with the horses. And I hope you'll come back and talk to me again soon.
Anytime. Thank you.
This has been a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. You can find me on Facebook. You can also follow us on Instagram, Elizabeth_TRT. Send me an email to Elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. Follow us. Previous shows at kcbx.org, and podcast our show to share with others through Apple Podcasts. Thank you for supporting Central Coast Public Radio, KCBX.
The things you wanted, I bought them for you. Graceless lady, you know who I am. You know I can't let you slide through my hands. Why? To show me the same. No sweeping exits. Oh, off stage line.
could make me feel bitter or treat you unkind.